Everything that we put into it, though, is removable and repurposable. I designed all the systems myself. I installed them all myself. I know how they went in. I know how they come out. And I really kept that in mind.
Welcome to the Tiny House Lifestyle Podcast, the show where you learn how to plan, build, and live the tiny lifestyle. I'm your host, Ethan Waldman, and this is episode 255 with Brian Alexevich. I met Brian when he asked to interview me on his website, The Lots Project, which is a show primarily for people who are living full-time in RVs. We got to talking, and I realized that I've never had an RV dweller on the show, and what I really like about Brian is that he downsized from a 35-acre homestead to living in an RV, so a major downsize that took years. And him and his wife also considered a tiny house on wheels, but they ended up deciding against it. And so in this interview, we'll talk through some of the reasons why you might choose an RV over a tiny house and what the advantages and disadvantages are to that decision. I hope you stick around. Are you looking for a compact and affordable way to streamline your lifestyle? I'd like to tell you about the sponsor of this week's episode, PodExGo, and their new Grande S1 tiny home. This meticulously designed tiny home expands from a trailer to a 364-square-foot home with just the push of a button. Certified by NOAA and built to ANSI 119.5 standards, the Grande S1 is towable with an F-250 or equivalent. The PodExGo home is 99% factory-built with healthy and eco-friendly materials, so you can rest easy knowing your home is taking care of you and the environment. It features a fully fitted kitchen, bedroom, bath, and living room with ingenious storage spaces throughout. PodExGo has even partnered with Renogy Solar Systems so you can live off-grid or reduce your energy bills. Discover the ultimate choice for your tiny lifestyle with PodExGo's Grande S1 model. PodExGo has launched their crowdfunding campaign with special pricing starting from just $49,000. Visit podexgo.com to watch a video of the S1 unfold and to get the crowdfunding launch discount. Again, that website is podexgo, that's podexgo.com. Thank you so much to PodExGo for sponsoring our show. Here with Brian Alexevich. After establishing a 35-acre homestead in Minnesota, Brian and his wife decided to escape the cold, but had no idea where they wanted to go. After exploring many different options, they decided to hit the road in a travel trailer with their three St. Bernards. The Lots Project is documenting the journey. Brian, welcome to the show.
Hey, Ethan, how's it going, man?
Pretty good, pretty good. Thanks for being here.
Oh, no problem. Thanks for having me.
You're very welcome. So, you actually interviewed me for your show a couple of weeks ago, and I got to kind of thinking and realizing that I had never really had anyone on Tiny House Lifestyle Podcast to talk specifically about life in an RV. And like early on in the tiny house movement, I think there was like a lot of like almost sensitivity because we got the question a lot like, oh, why don't you just build an RV? Like, or why don't you just buy an RV? And it was always like, no, that's a very different thing. And, but I feel like we're at the point now where like it's differentiated enough that we don't need to be quite as sensitive about it. So,
right.
So tell me, I guess I'm curious really to hear about your decision-making process, because you really mentioned when we did our interview, you mentioned that you and your wife were thinking about a tiny house on wheels. So kind of talk me through it.
Yeah. So, man, this was back. We've been on the road since September. I think we started planning that like 2 years prior to that.
Okay.
And it all culminated with a big snowstorm in Minnesota. It was like in the middle of October. And we just kind of threw our hands up and said, we love this lifestyle. Yeah. We love the farm. We got to move. And So we just got to get out of the cold. And so we kind of started looking around on the internet and bopping around on different, kind of looking at different YouTube channels. And we settled on the mountains of Idaho. We're like, okay, low restrictions and this and that. And we're like, okay. And then we started looking into alternative lifestyles. We were looking living quarters. We looked deeply into a yurt, basically, mm-hmm. was what we decided on.
Mm-hmm.
You know, just we were ready to move out of the normal home, and we were looking for raw land. We kind of wanted to develop it all ourselves. We considered tiny homes. We considered a yurt, which we felt that we could move easier if we wanted to move to a different property at some point. The tiny home, I have a long background in trailers and industrial and situations, okay, and I was really hesitant to do the traveling tiny home. I just didn't like a lot of pulling it down the road.
Yeah.
And since we were going to sit there, we dove into the yurt, we went down that road more, and we just kind of liked it.
Okay.
And at one point, we just finally said, well, what are we going to do when we get there? First, well, how are we going to get to this property that we haven't bought yet?
Okay.
When we get there, what are we going to live in?
Yep.
And so we said, well, let's do a travel trailer. We'll take a travel trailer out there. We'll live in it while we put the yurt up, while we establish the property, while we get whatever utilities, if we want them or not. And so we decided on that. We were going to do that.
Yep.
And one day we looked and said, why are we going to Idaho? Neither of us had ever really been to the mountains of Idaho.
Yeah, it doesn't sound much warmer than Minnesota to me.
well, there is, you know, you have the banana belt there, right, at the bottom of the mountains. That is, like, it's a zone 7. And in Minnesota, we are like a 3A, a 3B borderline. So it was pretty rough. So we were like, we'll do up this travel trailer, we'll live in it, and, well, why are we going to Idaho? Why don't we go look around?
Okay.
If we're building out this travel trailer and we don't know where we want to be, why don't we just go exploring?
Yeah.
And that's how we ended up in the travel trailer. But, you know, right along the same lines is why people kind of explore the tiny house living. We went into all of that same scenarios, deciding on a small space. I think we all share that common bond of a small space. Yeah. Whether it's stationary, tiny home, RV, yurt, anything alternative like that.
Yeah. Interesting. So now you've been on the road now for how long?
Since September. We took off mid-September. We were supposed to close on our house right at the beginning of September, okay, and it ended up falling through, and it was a big mess, and we just decided to take off before winter. Okay. So we've been traveling now for about 5-6 months.
Nice. So give me some deets on your travel trailer. Like, you know, what are the dimensions? What features does it have? How much does it weigh? You know, that kind of stuff.
Sure. So we picked up a 2014 32-foot Palomino Puma pull behind. Okay. So it's a pull behind bumper pull trailer.
Okay.
I'm 6'5".
Yep.
So I really am limited in the fifth wheel type travel trailers, because usually the bedroom's in the front.
Yep.
And to be able to have head clearance for me, the thing has just got to be enormous tall. Yep. So we went with the bumper pull. We have two slide outs. We have one in the main room, which is kind of like the living room where I'm sitting right now, actually, is the one slide out. And then the other is in the back. Basically, when we bought it, we gutted it almost completely.
Wow.
It had like a bunkhouse in it. We don't need that. It's my wife and I and our three St. Bernards. And so, like, open space is a premium for all the large bodies.
Yeah.
She's the smallest one in here. All the dogs are way more than her and less than me.
Yeah.
And so getting it open, we took out all the bunks. We took out all like the extra sleeping storage. We installed 1100 watts of solar, mm-hmm, with 350 amp hours of lithium batteries. We put in a composting toilet and a mini wood stove. We're really set up. We spent the last 3 months in actually like a old watermelon field in Texas.
Nice.
Just hanging out in staying out of the cold. So we don't need hookups. We really focused on being able to go to a piece of raw property when we want to purchase one.
Yeah.
Or be able to stay on like BLM land when we're traveling around. So we really made ourselves self-sufficient like that.
Nice.
And we tow it around with an F-250 because it is super heavy. I can't even really tell you what it weighs at the very moment. We're kind of decluttering and actually throwing out more crap since we parked and started unpacking everything. We realized we didn't need everything that we thought we wanted to bring. So we'll get a reweight when we move. But yeah, we stacked it pretty heavy.
If you had to guess, what would you think?
My wife says we're 11,000.
Oh, wow. Okay.
For the trailer.
Wow.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah, that definitely going with the F-250. And I mean, we're already talking, we want to go smaller. Yeah. We didn't know what we wanted, really. We assumed being the two of us, everything we own, because we don't have a secret stash storage locker anywhere. We have everything with us.
Yeah.
And so we thought we needed a lot of storage room. And as we're getting on the road and actually realizing what's important and what we want, we're throwing stuff away. It's fantastic. Yeah. We have a dumpster here at the place we're staying, and we've definitely utilized that to the fullest extent as we go through things and go, what was I thinking?
So what are you, what did you spend on the trailer and how much did you put into it on the gut job?
It was 17. I think it was 17,000 when we bought the trailer. Nice. We gutted it out. I did all the work. I think we ended up putting about, I would say, another 15 into it, mm-hmm. with all the solar components and everything. Yep. Everything that we put into it, though, is removable and repurposable. Okay. I designed all the systems myself. I installed them all myself. I know how they went in. I know how they come out. And I really kept that in mind. We kind of have a plan of using this as a kind of a home base if we do buy a property. Uh-huh. Somewhere that we can just set it and leave it, and whether we leave the systems with it or put it in a new trailer with us and take it along.
Nice.
That's all been designed for that.
Cool.
Or if something happens to this where we have to get rid of it, we can take all this equipment with us.
So because this is a travel trailer, I'm guessing it has some like gray water holding tanks and freshwater holding tanks. How much capacity do you have on board?
We have 45 gallons fresh water.
Okay.
And we don't use the black water anymore since we went to the composting toilet. So we had, I believe it was 45 gallons combined. I ended up putting a combined tank on the, to combine the black and the gray.
Makes sense.
And we never fill it.
Yeah.
we really never fill it. And then we also put a 70 gallon poly tank in the bed of our truck. Okay. That sits in the front that we can fill, so we don't have to hook up the trailer to go get water. We can just take the truck wherever we can scavenge water from.
Nice.
And fill the tank and bring it
back. That's really smart.
Yeah. We try not to drive around with it full.
Yeah.
It's another 500 pounds, but when we're local and we want to go run and get water, it's really, really nice.
Yeah. That's clever. And what's the process like for filling those tanks? Can you do it from the outside of the trailer?
Yeah. There's actually, so if we do get a spot that has a water hookup, like your typical RV spot, we can just hook the hose up to the main line and have pressurized water. What we do normally is, I can transfer it from my truck to the trailer. Mm-hmm. I took, so we have a RV 12 volt water pump in the trailer for use. I bought a spare one of those because I don't want to be without one. And then I wired alligator clips to it. So I use that to actually transfer the water from the truck to the trailer.
Nice.
And just use a hose into the fill tank. Or if I don't feel like getting all that out, we have some jerry cans and I just like gravity feed them into the jerry cans and dump them in.
Cool.
That's what I usually end up doing anyway, because it's nice to stand outside and just enjoy the outside instead of listening to pump run.
Yeah, totally. So as part of your gut job, did you add any insulation to the trailer? And, you know, have you been anywhere cold in the travel trailer?
We did a little bit. We didn't end up stripping much of the exterior walls down. That's kind of where we stopped. There were some sections that we peeled out, and when we did, we double insulated with like Reflectix.
Yeah.
We haven't been anywhere cold. We're kind of trying to avoid that. We were in Texas in about a month ago. It got down below freezing for like 4 or 5 days.
Mm-hmm.
Basically, we just drained all our water and ran the wood stove constantly, had the propane backup furnace. And I mean, it stayed relatively comfortable in here. I think we kept it probably about 50 degrees.
All right.
So, and it was down in the teens. So you really adapt. We ride the temperature in here anywhere between 45 and 80, really.
Okay. Interesting.
Just like being outside.
Yeah, exactly. Just like being outside. So, you know, in your previous life, you know, in you were homesteading 35 acres. You know, everyone that I know who has a farm or homestead has so much stuff, tools, equipment, supplies. Like, it is like, it's not a bad lifestyle. And I'm not saying this with any judgment, because you need that stuff to do the lifestyle. But I'm curious, you know, what was it like going from that to, you know, downsizing as small as living in a travel trailer?
It was painful. It was really painful. I mean, I'll kind of cop to being borderline hoarder.
Uh-huh.
Just in the mentality of, like you said, with the homestead, like I can use this for something. Yeah. And I have the space for it. Like I had a 40 by 100 barn that I could fill with whatever I wanted, mm-hmm. whether it be livestock or supplies, quote unquote supplies. We had a ton of shit and just tools and equipment and fence supplies and bird supplies and feeders and all of that stuff. That's why it took so long, really.
Yeah.
It was a disaster to try to do. We donated a lot. We got a bunch of dumpsters, and then we sold the property with a lot of the stuff that we felt would be valuable for someone that wanted to do a homestead in the future. And it came with a lot of junk too. And it was just kind of like, you get the good with the bad, and it is what it
is. It's part of the deal.
Yeah, it was definitely. We had a 1500 square foot house, a 25 by 25 detached garage, a 10 by 25 shed, 100 by 60 barn, and then another chicken coop building that had a bunch of crap in it too.
Wow.
Yeah, it was a lot. It's definitely a big change. But once I decided that that's what I wanted to do and started doing it and realized how good it felt, like I said, since we've left, we've been throwing more away, to where we were like, okay, this is the bare minimum we'll ever keep. We'll always have this stuff. And we're just like, yeah, we don't need it.
Do you miss anything about that lifestyle?
I miss the food security. I miss the being able to go out and grab some eggs or go out and call a chicken if I wanted. Mm-hmm. The 7 deep freezers I had full of meat that I knew where it was raised. It was hatched, born, or raised on my property, dispatched on my property and put in my freezer. It doesn't get any more food secure than that. Yeah. That's what I miss.
Yeah.
Other than that, I love this. I love being different places. We've really actually settled down here for a couple months now. I've been helping a friend with some work, and we've realized that we don't want to be stationary this long. It just gets you complacent. We realize it's kind of the tipping point that we want to start moving when we don't need to use the GPS anymore.
Yeah.
Like when we go out to go to the store and you're like, oh, I know how to get there at home. No problem. It's time to kind of move somewhere else.
Yeah. That's cool. So how often are you moving? And it sounds like you're not staying in your typical RV parks. Like, how did you hook up with the middle of the watermelon field?
Well, we target hip camp. When we were up in Minnesota, I ran a hip camp in one of the back fields of our property.
Okay.
Basically, it's a private campground. So that was kind of my MO, or BLM land, stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
When we wanted to stay long-term down here to come down and help my friend out, I started looking for hip camps close to his area, found one, reached out to the landowner, said, hey, I don't need one of your spots. If you just have someplace I can park out of the way, kind of isolated, yeah, so my dogs aren't bothered and this and that, we don't need anything. And so we made an arrangement. They hooked me up with a little bit of a deal. We're just kind of parked off to the side. And yeah, they got 400 acres here, and it's pretty private. It's more private here than my homestead in Minnesota.
Wow.
So that's kind of how I hooked up with them.
Nice. How do the dogs like living tiny?
You know, that they were the reason we grabbed the 32. Yeah, they were the reason we grabbed the 32 foot travel trailer, and they sit on top of us. They like literally like right now I have one under my legs and I have one behind my chair, and the other one is like I could reach out and touch it. So
wow.
Yeah, we didn't have the dogs, or we had the dogs before we decided to do this.
Yeah.
So they just kind of got worked into the plans. I think we realized that it won't happen again.
Yeah.
We love them to death and they're here till the end, but when the end is the end, I don't think we'll have St. Bernards anymore. Yeah. And we've definitely experienced how to do this at its hardest.
Yeah. Yeah.
The water is ridiculous that we go through because of how much they drink. And that, I think, that and the mess from the dogs, because
yeah,
St. Bernards are notoriously gross animals.
Yeah, probably.
But they're lovers.
Yeah, they're super loving, but probably when you're in a bigger house, the like impact of their slobber and messiness is more dispersed.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I can look around the trailer and you can tell where they eat and then where they shake their head, because you can look up and there's like a ring around the camper.
Yep.
Where you've tried to clean up all the slobber, but it'll like land on the ceiling. And you're like, why is there a slobber slinger thing on the ceiling?
On the ceiling.
And yeah, it gets interesting.
Nice. So what's the plan moving forward from here? It sounds like did you buy land in Idaho?
No, we didn't. We haven't bought any land. We kind of put the nest egg away when we sold our property. Our MO really is, we're going to travel. We're going to find places that we like. We're hoping to pick up 1 to 2 acres here, there, everywhere, raw land.
Uh-huh.
Ideally with a driveway or access to begin okay. with, so I don't have to do that, but basically someplace to park my trailer in the places I like, and then develop them into hip camps myself. Yeah. So when I'm not using them, I can have them for residual income and ongoing income. And yeah, just kind of traveling around. I'm doing in-person and online consults for people that also want to set up hip mm-hmm. camps. So traveling to consulting gigs nice. Is kind of easy when you have a trailer and you can and go to them. So we have waypoints and we just kind of plan the adventures in between those appointments. Wait. And that's kind of where we're going to roll for now. We're here until I think March, and then we're going to kind of roll up to Tennessee. Then I have to go up to the East Coast a little bit to visit some family, and then out to South Dakota. And that's kind of the first half of our year coming up. So
nice. Now, you know, it seems that the distinction between a travel trailer and a tiny house, if you want to be traveling and on the road, that's like one of the main benefits. And then there's also, you know, just the cost. I mean, the fact that you were able to buy that travel trailer for $17,000 and you probably didn't need to gut it, but you decided to put some work into it. So the cost is pretty significant compared to a tiny house on wheels. Do you have any tips for, you know, the full-time lifestyle in a travel trailer like that? Like maybe tips for somebody who's considering a tiny house, but is now thinking, okay, maybe a travel trailer will be better for my lifestyle.
Yeah. Do your research as far as, well, prices have gone up. Let me tell you, we bought our trailer. Now it'll be 3 years ago in September. So mm-hmm. we're 2.5 years in with all the stuff that went down. Prices kind of skyrocketed.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if they're coming down. I'm not really in the market for a new trailer, but what I would suggest is figure out the trailer you want and then buy your vehicle to tow it. It gets way easier to match the tow weight of the trailer to what your vehicle is able to do. If you have a truck, if you have to work within those bounds, you gotta do what you gotta do.
Yeah.
But if you have nothing, like we went from a Subaru Outback is what we had when we started this whole thing. Yeah. We bought the trailer first. We had somebody tow it home for us. And then we bought a truck that was comparable to towing it. I think that was an easier way for us to do it. And it allowed us to kind of get the trailer we wanted and then match the vehicle to it.
Got it.
You're going to want to go and walk through the things.
Okay.
And spend some time in them, possibly rent one. Do your research and know what you're getting into before you do it. I'm in a lot of online full-time RVer communities, and I see people that are on the road. They've been on the road for a month asking questions that, like, I dove into before I even decided that I was going to do it, let alone before I took off full-time. And that scares me, like, that people are willing to go for it, do it. Like, I'm all about that. But cover your bases and know what's going on. Know how your systems work. Know how everything functions. If you didn't install it yourself and you don't know how it is, find somebody. And you might have to pay a couple bucks, but find somebody to walk you through that system. So when you are camping, you're not stuck when it doesn't work. Like, you know what's going on.
Yeah.
There's a big lack of mobile RV techs, mechanics, like somebody that's going to come to you and fix it. And if you're stuck somewhere, you're stuck somewhere. And either you got to figure it out and know how it works, or you got to get it somewhere to somebody to fix it. So I would really suggest knowing your thing inside out before you really go full time.
Got it. So spend some time, like, maybe living in it on your property or somewhere nearby before you.
We spent 2 years living in ours as we retrofitted it. Like, I have the advantage of I installed pretty much everything in it. So, like, I know how it works because I built it. But yeah, we lived in our driveway for, I think it was almost 2 years while we did the whole conversion.
Yeah. So tell me about kind of the hip camp opportunity. It's kind of the sleeper option versus Airbnb, but, what kind of things are you seeing there, and what kind of opportunities for someone who maybe is, you know, owns some land and is trying to earn some extra money to build that tiny house?
Yeah. So Hip Camp is basically the Airbnb of the camping world. There's other companies that do the same thing, but basically you're a private landowner and you want to rent out a spot on your property, just like an Airbnb renting out a room.
Yep.
So someone that has a property can set up a tent site. They can set up a primitive camping site that doesn't have any electricity. There's certain restrictions depending on where you're at. There's toilet restrictions where you might have to put in like a composting toilet or require campers to bring something with them.
Outhouse or something.
There's the ins and outs of all the regulations.
Okay.
But basically it's an online calendar that people can browse your listing and rent a camping spot.
Nice.
Come out and pitch a tent, have a campsite. There's all sorts of upsell options that you can do for them, different amenities that you can offer. Yeah, it's a big wide open. It's basically like hotel room shopping.
Cool.
But for campsites.
Yeah, the site, I checked it out. Like, if you're familiar with the Airbnb platform, using the Hip Camp website will feel pretty familiar to you.
Yeah, for sure. And that's where I draw like my advice from is someone that has set one up, but also more as on the camper side. So I bring that perspective to someone that's looking to set up a site. What I look for when I'm looking for a camping site, what turns me on, what turns me off. I talk to other campers and decide and see what they're seeing.
Yeah.
People that are in different situations than me that need hookups or are tent camping. When I'm at these places, I talk to the other campers. I talk to the owners. Just bringing that wealth of knowledge and experience to someone trying to set this up on their own. So yeah, I offer all sorts of services down that road as far as anything from just answering questions to full smash on site, setting everything up, documenting it, and putting the website up, and then even as far as managing the listing for them. So if they're off site and they don't want to deal with it, mm-hmm. I'll do that. Cool. I'll do that. I'll do the customer service, find people to do like the on site maintenance for them and things like that. So
awesome.
It's an open option for sure.
Sweet. Sweet. Well, I really appreciate you sharing all the, you know, the kind of journey that you've been on, because that's, again, just wow, what a transition going from a 35-acre homestead to a travel trailer.
Yeah, it was definitely a shock for sure.
Yeah. Awesome. Well, you know, one thing that I like to ask all my guests is, you know, what are two or three resources that were really helpful for you on your tiny house journey that you'd like to share with our listeners?
Sure. YouTube University for sure. That's where I dug in, basically kind of found the personalities that I like.
Yep.
And followed them and just dove into all the resources.
Mm-hmm.
I'm a research junkie. That's kind of why I go down this consulting road and do all that thing, because I do more research than I'll ever need for myself,
mm-hmm.
just so I know, just in case. So to be able to share that, YouTube, I mean, really, I dove into YouTube and I can't tell you any specific channels, because most likely at this point, they're probably, a lot of them are non-existent. I actually interviewed someone a couple of weeks ago that I watched their YouTube channel when I was building my trailer, and I didn't put two and two together. So I'm not really good with the names, but definitely dive in, do your keyword searches, research what you need to want, and follow those personalities that you
like. Nice. Any other ones?
You know, you could always come to my
There you
site.
Go. TheLotsProject.com.
TheLotsProject.com is kind of the home base for all our stuff. We kind of dive into our whole life under this.
Nice.
So we have a lot of side projects going on with everything that else that interests us, which isn't really pertinent to this conversation. But there's a lot of different avenues you can come to find at thelotsproject.com.
Awesome. Well, Brian Alexovich, thank you so much for being a guest on the show today.
Hey, no problem. Thanks for having me, Ethan.
Thank you so much to Brian Alexovich for being a guest on the show today. You can find the show notes, including pictures of Brian's RV, a complete transcript, and links to all of Brian's work at thetinyhouse.net/255. Again, that's thetinyhouse.net/255. Thank you so much to PodXGo for sponsoring the podcast this week. Don't forget to check out podxgo.com to learn more about their crowdfunding launch and check out the Grande S1 Tiny House. Well, that is all for this week. I'm your host, Ethan Waldman, and I'll be back next week with another episode of the Tiny House Lifestyle Podcast.